concentrate on what I'm doing. And did she come down out? Just dancing away. I thought, okay.
Just go with it.
Probably wouldn't be mad if some of us would get it contained just like that. Start doing what she's doing. That would probably be all right, wouldn't it?
Might not be as cute.
Might be as entertaining, just not as cute. Could be just as entertaining, just not necessarily quite as cute. And we might still be laughing, but it just wouldn't necessarily be the same. I think she's coming back. I don't know if she's going to be back. She'll find her somewhere along the way. I want to share one thing. Something with some of my preacher friends, and some of them actually have people. They do things a little different than what you would think. You know, most of the time you're always telling people to put your phones away. Of course, now everyone uses their phone for the Bible or everything else. You never know, you know, what they're doing. What they actually do is they'll have people that, if there's a statement, if there's something that is said, something they like, they'll tweet it out or they'll Facebook it or send it out just during the service. I'm okay with that. You know, matter of fact, one of my friends told me, he said, I'll be preaching. I said, this is a tweetable statement. So I'll give y'all some tweetable statements you can send out during the service. And that way you can help get the word out. But in all honesty, as we put stuff out on social media, the more you share it onto your page itself, the more people it sees. So if our church has 50 people that are friends with it, once you share it, all your friends see it. And so it can go out to 100 some people. And then it can go out, if each one does it, it can get multiplied out more and more so all the different ones can start to see it. So that's one of the things we wouldn't mind you doing with social media, is just sharing some of the content, the messages, different things like that. And we are working on finding the right platform that will help us as we take things live. I don't really want to do it on Facebook Live. I'd rather do it where you can access it live, but it's not just something you're going to stumble across all the time. So that's that way you can do it, and then you can pull up and see the service if you're not able to see it live, see it, watch it again, do something else. So we're working with some of those things and just kind of pray for us as we figure it out. Be patient with us as we figure it all out. Those are some of the things we're doing, and we'll let it grow from there. I always like to ask you on Wednesday night, someone share something about your week, something that, or just doesn't have to be this week, but just something you'd like to share, something God's doing or you're doing. It doesn't have to be super spiritual kind of thing. It can be, but you know, it just be something that you're happy about, excited about, something you just feel like you should share or would share. Anything to kind of help us kind of break the ice and get going. Yeah, I know you have to participate, did you? Anybody got anything going on in their week? Anybody happy with anything in their life right now? Noah. Your little girl's walking, man.
I know. It's many ups and downs, but at the end of the day, just happy to be able to have it.
Amen. Anybody else share anything going on? I'm excited about a couple things I'll tell you about. School has started back for me as well. So it's a lot of work, but at the same time, it's a lot of growth and opportunity, and so there's so many different things that I'm able to see God doing. And just the fact I'm at school, on scholarship, that was created for pastors that need to go back to school for full-time pastors. And so you as a church are a part of that because you support me to be full-time. And through all these years, that's always allowed me to continue my education, continue to grow as a person, as a Christian, and as a pastor. We can certainly look back over the 19 years and say, yeah, there's been growth. And I'm a big proponent for continued growth, always trying to move forward and continue to grow. And I think that's something God's always teaching. And so I'm grateful for that and happy for that. Anyone else want to share anything? All right, but don't get out of don't think you're going to settle in and not participate in the service, because I do have some things I'd like you to participate in. So, you know, don't tune me out. Don't come in and sit down and just don't do anything. So anyway, we'll welcome you back and get started in our series. And our series is Learning the Gospel from Matthew. And so as we talk about that many times, it is essentially a study of the book of Matthew, but the study looks at how does Matthew tell the story of Jesus Christ. We know that he does. You know, the the gospel according to Matthew, gospel according to Mark, gospel according to Luke, gospel according to John. We see all of those. But you sometimes want to stop and say, how is it that they present this material? What's the angle? There's an audience that he's trying to reach. There's obstacles to their faith that he's trying to overcome. Now, when we look at the Bible, always try to look at it. I guess if you grow up in church or if you grow up in a place where you're expected to believe or just assume that you believe, you'll look at the Bible as, okay, this is what we believe. You don't even really know what's in it all the time. You know, a lot of people haven't really read the Bible, even though they've grown up in church. And so when you open the Bible, it's not just boring information. It's stories. And it's a person that's laid out an argument and said, this is the Messiah. This is Jesus Christ. This is the only way to God. Here's how we know that. Here's the evidence for all of that. And that's something that we look at. There's a single word with Matthew's gospel that stands out. It's a single word that really describes to us something that's a common theme. He continues to go over and over, and he uses as an evidence. Anybody remember what that single word is? Fulfillment. I think I heard back there a couple of different times. So fulfilled, fulfilled, or fulfillment. Any of those, as long as it's all the same idea. So you'll see this phrase over and over again, that it might be what? Fulfilled. And what he's doing is he says, this is what happened, or this is what Jesus did, or this is what God did, that it might be fulfilled. Well, what is he talking about? What is being fulfilled? I warned y'all, he's going to have to participate. You've got to think. When he says that it might be fulfilled, prophecy of Jesus Christ. So for thousands of years, and really you'd go back 4,000 years prior to the time that Matthew's writing, there's been a promise, an idea that a Messiah was going to come. Messiah being a select one, a chosen one. The anointed one, actually, is what that refers to. And this person is coming to do what? He's coming to deliver us from our sin. And so all through this time, this generation of Jews, they're looking for the Messiah to come. They just miss it when he does come. And Matthew's job is to try to reach out to them and say, look, you missed him, but this is him, and here's how we know. And he backs up and says, all of the evidence is that the prophecies about this Messiah were fulfilled in Jesus Christ. He's the only person that's fulfilled them, but he fulfilled every one of these promises about himself, about the Messiah that would come. Therefore, we said he kind of opens up by indicating Jesus could be the Messiah. Like, you should accept the fact he at least could be. But then as he unfolds the evidence, you come to what? He must be. He must be him, because he's the only person to fulfill all of these prophecies. Alright, so we kind of saw all those things. Tonight we're actually going to look into the 12th chapter. And even though we've been in Matthew for a long time, believe it or not, I have decided to slow it down a little bit. We're going too fast. And so you may say, how in the world are we going too fast? There's just some information that we need to look at and to examine. And I'm remembering that One, we don't always retain everything we were taught, and we don't always know everything that people assume we know. And so I don't want to assume you know things. I'd rather walk through it a little bit slower and make sure that you're getting information. I think you'll see what I'm talking about tonight. But there's a section that we're going to deal with, and it's often referred to as the conflict with the Pharisees. But as we look at that, I want to really ask the question, who are the Pharisees? Now, we have a general idea about the Pharisees. What would you say? How would you answer some of that? Again, participation. And how would you answer that question if someone said, who are the Pharisees? What bits and pieces would you put together?
Religious rulers.
Okay, we have religious rulers. Was that what you would say? Okay, religious group, religious rulers. Anything else? All right, so they were the elite. They certainly enjoyed elitist status. They definitely felt that they were above and better than everyone else.
Did people look to them for answers?
A lot of times they did. They're not. The scribes would have been more the interpreters of the scripture. The Pharisees were the interpreters of the law, if that makes sense. They were, this is what you do and this is what you don't do.
Is that kind of like Moses and Aaron? Is that what...
Not exactly. Matter of fact, well, let's look at, that's a good segue. Is that the right word? That's a good segue into where we're going. See, all my education, I learned a new word, segue. So we're going to segue into this section right here because Dale's helping us to do that. There's actually not a lot known about the Pharisees' formation, where they originated, how they originated. There's not a solid understanding of that pinpoint, and that is because they are a Jewish group. But when you go and you read the Old Testament, you'll read all the way from Genesis to the last book of the Old Testament. Anyone know what that book would be? Of the Old Testament. Malachi, there you go. So the last book of the Old Testament, and you're not going to read about the Pharisees. You're never going to encounter them. You'll never see them. They did not exist in the time period of the Old Testament. But when you open up the first book of the New Testament, which is what? Matthew. You're immediately confronted with them. And Matthew speaks about the Pharisees not in a way of introducing them to his readers, because they're common. They know who they are. So what does this tell us? There's how many years have passed, basically, you don't have to be exact, but roughly how many years have passed from the ending of the Old Testament to the beginning period of the New Testament?
400
years. So what we know then is they were coming together, that whenever their existence started, it started during that 400, and that's called the intertestamental time. So, there were a lot of things that took place for Israel during that time. And one of those things was they faced a lot of persecution. There's a lot of uprisings, different things. And in order to hold on to certain things, there was a group of people that, actually the Herodians, you would find them only in the New Testament, the Sadducees, a group called Essenes, say it right, and the Pharisees. And these groups formed during this time period. And there was a group that wanted to separate themselves the best that they knew how and dedicate themselves to strict obedience to the law of God. So, noble cause or not a noble cause? Very noble cause. So their motive, their intention is to, let's separate ourselves and live as godly as possible. And let's adhere as close as we can to the law of God. And we'll have a high standard for doing that, and we'll model that to other people and set that as an example. So that's actually how they came together. Of course, what we see is something that started as something very good with well intentions of trying to be godly led to something that really become leaving God out. And that's what happened with the Pharisees. And that's important to understand as you look at them, because we always see them as wearing the black hats in the Bible, in the New Testament, right? The only thing they existed for is to oppose Jesus Christ. You know, but really their goal, their intention in life was to adhere as strictly as they could to the law of God. So here's some things that happened. They decided this is the law of God, and we don't want to go outside that boundary. Let's set up a hedge, if we could. Let's set up a protective boundary to make sure we don't get into that. All right, so let me give you an example of how that could come across. Let's say that, for sake of argument, hypothetically, that the law said you're not supposed to wear red shirts. Okay, we're just making this up. Just make sure everyone understands. Let's just say the law said you're not supposed to wear red shirts. So the Pharisees would say, okay, we don't want to wear red shirts, no problem. But then someone comes in and they're wearing maybe a maroon shirt, sort of like Landon, maybe something like my wife is wearing. And now there's a question, are they wearing a red shirt? Well, it's in the red family. Well, another one wears not a red shirt, but more of a pinkish type shirt. Well, is that still in the red family? So now the law would start to say, okay, well, just to be sure that we're not wearing a red shirt by accident, we won't wear maroon and we won't wear pink. Well, that could start to play out itself little bit more. So let's just say, for sake of argument, that now what we've decided is if, to be as strictly adherent to not wearing a red shirt, we will only wear white shirts. Are y'all still with me? Why are we only wearing white shirts? By the way, that's not the law that we're putting in place. It's a hypothetical situation. Why are we doing that? To make sure we don't wear a red one. That seems a little severe, doesn't it? But the Pharisees added so many laws to the law of God that it got that complicated. Now, here's the other issue. Was it wrong to wear a blue shirt? Did the Bible say anything about wearing a uniform? Well, it did say anything about wearing a red shirt. But in our hypothetical situation, did it say anything about wearing a blue shirt? No. But we, in order to make sure we don't wear a red shirt, we decided everyone would wear white shirts. Now someone shows up like Dale and Philip, and they're wearing what? What's the color of their shirts? Well, they're not white. So now how do we view them? Yeah, we're going to have to talk with them, right? Because they're violating what? Our tradition of only wearing white shirts. Well, why do we only wear white shirts? So that we wouldn't wear a red shirt by accident. Well, their shirt's not red. It doesn't matter. Our tradition says what? White. Right. Now, I've gone through all of that so you would understand the Pharisees. Their original intention is to do what? Strictly adhere to the word, to the law of God. In order to do that, they started making little boundaries with other rules and regulations. And that's why when you get to the New Testament, they're so confused about what God's law actually is that they don't know how to follow it. And they're more concerned with their traditions than they are with the actual law of God. But remember, they started with well intentions of adhering to the commands of God. Matter of fact, when they first started, they wanted to be an example to other people. Why? So that those other people could strictly adhere to the word of God and be in a right relationship with God. They cared about other people. But when we look some hundreds of years later, we get to the fact in the New Testament, they're confronting Jesus Christ. Do they come across as a friendly people that are out to help you and love you? Why? Their focus had stopped being about God's actual law. It started being about their own tradition. That would come to be a real problem for them. So we're going to see Jesus confronted with the Pharisees, but I want you to understand that background so you can say, okay, I get who the Pharisees are now and why they're concerned with these things, that the misinterpretation of the law. So, here's a tweetable statement. Y'all get that? There you go, girl.
I already tweeted that we couldn't wear a red shirt.
All right, there you go. Yeah, he's already tweeted that. Don't tweet nothing else, Kurt. So here's the statement. I was putting all this together. This is what I came up with, but I'm going to have to explain it so that we'll make sure we understand it. Don't fall in love with godliness. Fall in love with God. So who would help me explain that? What do I mean by that? Don't fall in love with godliness. Is that wrong? Fall in love with godliness? We shouldn't want to be godly. But why am I saying that? You missed the main goal. What are you going to say, Cole?
Same thing.
All right. You missed the main point. So godliness, if the person said, I'm going to strive to be godly, that is not a bad goal to strive for. But if you get fixated on, I'm going to be godly, and that's your main goal, you might miss actually being godly. And that's what happened to the Pharisees, right? They set their attention, their effort, their goal was to be what? Godly. But when we find them in the New Testament, how far had they missed that mark? About as far as you could miss it. So they opposed and crucified the Son of God. How godly is that? All right, so that's why I say don't fall in love with godliness, fall in love with God. Pharisees fell in love with being godly. Then they measured or compared themselves to other people. So if I want to be godly by not wearing a red shirt, as our example was, I start comparing myself because I decided in order to do it, I'm going to make sure I wear a white shirt. Now I'm comparing myself to people that wear blue shirts and say, well, I'm so much better than them. And they're just heretics. And that's how it happens. All right? Now that is a very loose illustration of what actually takes place in life even today. When people are seeking to be godly, but they miss that point. It's problematic to try to fall in love with godliness. Here's why. I'm going to give you three things. You don't have to tweet them. The problem with trying to be godly or seeking to be godly is your goal and not fall in love with God. It gives an inflated sense of self-godliness. Y'all know what I mean by an inflated sense of self-godliness? It makes you feel, well, I'm not wearing a blue shirt, so I'm really a lot better than someone else. It also gives you a deflated sense of other people's godliness. Well, he's wearing a yellow shirt. That's not white. You know, I'm the only person that's getting it right, is the way people start to think. Matter of fact, the Pharisees thought what? They were the only group that was pleasing to God. We don't have this problem anymore, but I mean, years ago, I remember sometimes people stand up and I want to thank God for this church. You know, we're the only church. I'd stop people right there. I remember stopping two or three different times. We're not the only church that's getting things right. Matter of fact, we got a long ways to go to really get it right. But if you're not careful, that mentality will set in, and you'll start to think, "Well, we're really so much better than other people." And God's so much happier with this. Well, that's what the Pharisees were doing. Thirdly, the problem with that is it constantly moves the goal line of godliness. And it's discouraging to people. So how did we move the goal line of godliness? What did we say originally? Couldn't wear red. So just don't wear red and you hit the goal, right? But we changed that. Why? What did we do? Right, so we moved the goal line from not wearing red to not wearing burgundy, not wearing blue. We moved it to white. Well, what's going to happen eventually is someone's going to move that goal line again. And when you're always chasing and moving goal line, what happens? You get discouraged, and you quit. And that's what happened to a lot of people, is that they just felt like, well, there's no way I'll ever be good enough. There's no way I'll ever achieve this. And so that's why you want to fall in love with God. Because if you fall in love with God, you will become godly. You will achieve godliness. Why? Because you're in love with God. What happens when you're really in love with God? Well, you do everything you can to do what? To please Him, right? When you're really in love with God, you become like Him. You become more like God. You're spending more time with God. You're studying God. You're fellowshipping with God. And you're becoming like God. And that's why I said in this second, don't fall in love with godliness, fall in love with God. And when you do, you will achieve godliness. It's just a byproduct of that. All right, so let's move on to life application. So we haven't even got to the scriptures yet today. We will. We will get there, I promise. We're getting there. But we're laying the foundation. And so the application, can anyone read the purple, the words in purple right there? How does this apply to me? You know, it's like sometimes we forget that when we study the Bible, we start to see Pharisees, we see the things they did. How does that apply to me? You know, I tell people all the time, read the Bible. Well, I read the Bible, but you know, how does that apply to me? I didn't even understand what I read. Oh, by the way, one of the people that was baptized, one of the young female people that was baptized, I'm trying to be discreet, so we're actually live right now, so I'm trying to be discreet. Was reading her Bible this past week. Her mom put it on Facebook. Here she's reading her Bible. The cable went out, so she decided, let's read the Bible. I thought that was pretty exciting. So that's thrilling. When we read the Bible, when we come to church, like you're sitting here tonight, it's a Wednesday night, you're tired, and you're doing a really good job of staying, trying to say, okay, help me to get something. But how does it apply? What does it do? And that's what we want to look at. Why study the Bible tonight? I'm going to give you some questions. You have to figure out which one of these is right. So I'm doing everything I can to keep you engaged through this thing. Then we're going to unload some scripture on you and get you. So here's option number one. Why study the Bible tonight? On this Wednesday night, why come in here like you are and say it? Number one, studying the Bible automatically makes me right with God. That's one option. I'm not going to say it's the right one, but I'm going to say it's one option. Number two, studying the Bible equips me to apply its teaching to my life. Number three, studying the Bible gives you ammunition to argue with people on Facebook. You can answer on Facebook, you can argue with people. Number four, studying the Bible is boring, but God makes us do it anyway. Which one of those four options do you think is the right option? Thank y'all so much for getting it right. I really appreciate y'all getting that right. Studying the Bible equips me to apply its teachings to my life. That's why we do what we do. That's why we have a Wednesday night service. That's why we have our Sunday schools. That's why we tell you to read the Bible for yourself. It equips you to apply the Bible to yourself. All right, so the battle over the Sabbath. This is what we're going to get into today. The people who opposed Jesus while he was here on earth, they were often offended by his attitude and his mannerisms toward the Sabbath. And when we look at that, that's an example of this is seen in the way Jesus approached the Sabbath and the traditional treatment of the Sabbath by the Jews of his day. So let's go back. He's going to be confronted by the Pharisees. They're going to be very upset with how he handles the Sabbath. But let's go back and remember what we already learned. The Pharisees were started because they wanted to do what? Give a strict adherence to the law of God. And so they're going to protect the Sabbath. But we said they start doing what? They start creating more rules and boundaries that God didn't give them. Alright, so that's how we get to where we do now. So Matthew chapter number 12, verses 1 through 8. Bible says this, at that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the corn, and his disciples were hungered, which means hungry, and began to pluck the ears of corn and do what?
Eat.
And what day is this, Bible says?
Sabbath.
All right, so I want to, who will read verse number 2 for us? Good. Kurt, thanks.
But when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto him, behold, thy disciples do that which is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath day.
All right, so they see the disciples doing something on the Sabbath day, and they said, this is not lawful to do on the Sabbath day. Verse number 3, I need a volunteer. All right, Alice.
But he said unto them, have ye not read what David did when he was
hungered,
and they that were with him.
All right, so Jesus is going to take them back and say, wait a minute, you're arguing about a tradition of the Sabbath. He says, have you not read? And he uses that phrase a lot of times, which means he knows they have read it. He knows they know this. He's, what about what David did? They don't really argue with that. Why? Because David is the man in Israel. I mean, he's not existing anymore, but you know, you're not going to argue about anything. I need one more volunteer. Verse number 4. Christy? All right, so he says, all right, what about what David did? David went into the tabernacle, or he went into the house of God, and David ate something that was not, what's the word he uses? Lawful for him to eat. And what happened to David when he did that? Nothing. How did God respond? He didn't. How did God show his fierce anger towards David? Why didn't he show his fierce anger towards David? He wasn't angry. It's really simple. Jesus is taking them back and saying, wait a minute, you're really concerned about the law, but let's go back to a time when David did something that was, quote, unlawful. And so really to understand that story, David's on the run from Saul, and while he's on this run from Saul, he goes to the house of God, and he's got his men with him. And he talks to the priest, and he says, look, he says, we need food. Give us some loaves of bread if you have it. And the priest says, I don't have any common bread. Matter of fact, I believe I put the verse in here, but we won't go to it right now. He said, I don't have any bread that's common, which means it's not set apart unto God. And he says, all I have here is holy bread. Now, the bread's the same bread. The makeup, all that's the same. It's just this bread has been set aside in dedication to God and is put on this place to sort of, it was simply ceremonial. And he said, I can give you that if the men at least have kept themselves from women over the last few days and kept themselves clean. David says they have. And he gives him this bread that's not lawful for just anyone to come in and eat. Why was God okay with that? God was okay with that because the need of the human being, the need of David to sustain life, was more important to God than the ceremonial law of that showbread. And if God could set aside his ceremonial law for the need of a person, then certainly something could be done on the Sabbath day for the need of a person. And so that was the story behind all that Jesus did. When we really look, they're angry about the Sabbath day. So I'm going to ask a question. What's the Sabbath and what's the big deal? Sabbath is the what day of the week?
Seventh
day of the week. Thought this was interesting. The name comes from a Hebrew word which means to cease or to desist. Cease and desist. And we kind of understand that when you get into the history. The history goes back to Genesis at the creation week. And 6 days God made the earth. On the seventh day he ceased and desisted from his work. And he what?
Rested.
And when he did, God declared that day as a holy day. And here's something that's very interesting. When is the Sabbath? Is it, number one, 12:01 a.m. on Sunday morning to 11:59 Sunday night? Sundown Friday to sundown Saturday? Sunrise Saturday to sunrise Sunday? Which day is it? Which time period is it? I got a number one. I got a number two. I got a number three. Just because someone wanted to throw that one in there. For the Jews, in the daytime that Jesus was, the Jews' Sabbath was actually sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. Their days are run a little different than how we run our day. We run it from 12 midnight to 12 midnight. Theirs from sundown to sundown. The Sabbath is not Sunday. The Sabbath is actually on Saturday. It would begin at sundown, basically Friday, and go to sundown Saturday. So it's an interesting thing. So there's something else about the Sabbath. The Sabbath was addressed in the fourth of the Ten Commandments. God said, remember the Sabbath day to keep it what? So there's your command. Let's go back to the Pharisees. What's their original intent? Keep it holy. Live as strictly to the law of God as we can. So in order to make sure we don't break the Sabbath, let's put a lot of boundaries. 600 and some plus laws, I think, were added to the Sabbath, or the idea you couldn't move a chair because, of course, they had dirt floors, and if it scraped and it made a furrow in the floor, you were plowing. You couldn't walk so far. Yeah, I understand. A woman couldn't look into like a mirror or a reflection in the water because they might be tempted to pluck a gray hair. That would be work. I told y'all thought my illustration of the red shirt was a little off the wall, but now you're starting to see they had a lot of things. You could not walk with so much distance outside of your home because that was traveling. Of course, if you went out the night before and you took a rope and extended the porch area of your house out so far, then you could go X amount of ways past that. So they always had loopholes to get around there, causing this act of strict adherence to the law of God. But do you see the point? They're really trying to stick to the law of God, and they want to protect the Sabbath, and now they don't even know how to do that. God said, remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy, 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. And thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. And we'll move on for just a little bit. Sabbath became a part of Jewish identity. This is where it's going to get very interesting for them. The Sabbath becomes a part of their Jewish identity. Sabbath and circumcision are two things that the Jewish people are identified by. Keeping the Sabbath and circumcision. And what are the two areas that they really had confrontation with Christianity on? Sabbath day and circumcision. You'll see Paul dealing with a lot of that in the New Testament as well. So keeping the Sabbath become a national or patriotic type of thing. The Jews were the only nation that systematically set aside a specific day of the week to rest and worship God and dedicate that day to God. And they become identified by it. So now it has become a badge to wear. You getting that, right? This badge now, if you mess with Sabbath, now you're messing with their what? Their identity. And their patriotism as well as their religion. See how complex it's starting to get? Is there anything like that in America? Hold on to it. Think about it. We'll come back to it. Part number two, what does David have to do with all that? Well, we went through all the things that David did, so we'll skip through some of that. David's part was he went to the house of God, he got the showbread, he ate the showbread, and God was okay with that. Part number two, as we went through, let's do part number three. Part number three, Jesus is going to heal them on the Sabbath day. So he's already done one thing. He's allowed them to go through the cornfields, get the corn, work on the Sabbath day, if you would. And he's going to heal on the Sabbath day. Well, healing is a good thing, right? The Bible says, and when he was departed, this is right after the argument about the Sabbath. It's interesting what Jesus does. And when he was departed thence, he went into their what? So what happens at a synagogue? That's where they discuss the word of God. That's where they come together for worship. And behold, there was a man which had his hand withered, which means what? It's crippled. And they asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day that they might what? So they knew Jesus has compassion for people. And here's a crippled man, and he carries him on this Sabbath day. And so they just let's just nudge him a little bit. So they just ask him, hey, is it lawful to heal this guy on the Sabbath day? Now they think they're gagging a trap. If he doesn't heal the guy, what were they going to say about him? He didn't have compassion about people. If he does heal the guy, what are they going to say? He's a Sabbath breaker, a heretic. And so they're all set for it. And he said unto them, what man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep, and if it fall into a pit on the what day? Would he not lay hold on it and do what? He says, which one of you would not do that? How many of you think they wouldn't do it? They all. They probably have been guilty of that. Why Jesus brings that, it was a common thing. If you've got, and some people there in some places, they'll have it as an ox. How much then is a man better than what? Wherefore, is it lawful to do well on the Sabbath days? Jesus turns the question back around. He says, well, if you've got a livestock that went into the ditch, and if it's going to die there unless you get it out, and it's on the Sabbath day, you're going to let it die or you're going to get it out? Well, the answer was what? You're going to get it out. So now he turns back around and says, well, based on your own principle, is it lawful to do something good on the Sabbath day? What's the answer? According to their own principle, it is. And so what they thought they had him really locked in, just turn back on. But the point is, we kind of look through here. He gets in and he says, then saith he to the man, stretch forth thy hand, and he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole, like as the other. I always think it's interesting because they say, well, you know, he healed on Sabbath. All he did is spoke. If they're going to acknowledge that he healed the man by speaking, doesn't that take us back to Genesis and God spoke the world into existence? It's validation of who he is. But their willingness to see it was just not there. Then the Pharisees went out and held a council against him how they might do what? Destroy him. They, just based on the fact that they cannot argue against him, now he's done this on the Sabbath day, they're more upset that he has broken their Sabbath than what? Than that he healed a man? Or that he tended to needs of hunger. And so what we saw was what started off as someone setting something aside saying this is so that we can be strictly adhering to the word of God. We're going to serve God. We're going to be obedient to the word. into a place where people miss the whole mark about God and who he is. And now they're having animosity towards the Son of God. Even in light of the evidence of who he is. And they would rather have their tradition than to have what the tradition was set originally to do, and that's their godliness. Alright, so let's go back to a couple things we was going to get to before. Did God intend for men to use the Sabbath as an excuse to neglect human beings? He really did, didn't he? But that badge they wore really bothered them. That badge that said, "This we do this, this is our identity, we can't mess with our identity." And so now it's not about why did that law come into place, it's about what does it now represent? What does it mean to us? How does it represent us? And so that's why we'll go back to our other question. I'll start it this way. Is Sabbath keeping an issue that we wrestle with today? No. I mean, you don't do anything on Saturday because you're trying to keep the Sabbath. I mean, you have a really busy Saturday. We don't keep the Sabbath anymore, right? So how does this apply to me? How is that something that I would have to deal with? Well, that goes back to a question I asked you earlier. Is there something in America that could be similar to this, the principle of this, that comes out that, hey, this is a badge that we wear that represents us and either our nationality as Christians? What do y'all think? Are there things in America that, are there any examples that you? Alright, so on Sunday, some people will not buy anything on Sunday because to them that's a breaking of the Sabbath. So now, if you want to not buy anything on Sunday because to you that's your own personal way, say, look, I would rather sit this day aside, and so I'm not going to do anything, I'm not going to go out to eat, I'm not going to go purchase, I'm not going to do other things, I'm not going to mow my grass, that is absolutely fine. But again, it goes back to our red shirt, white shirt issue, am I allowed to put that on other? But what happens if I decide I'm not going to do those things because I'm going to honor God. This is my gift back to God. This is what I'm going to do, and you choose to be different. How should I view you? How should I relate to you? It's my choice. Should I look down on you if you don't have that same choice? No. What Bible do I have? I don't. Are y'all seeing where I'm going with this? Is that in America, we have set up things that have become the badge of Christianity. And then we hold people to it, and then when they start asking the question, well, where is this in the Bible that says I can't do that? Just don't do it. I'll give you another thing. And this is a little bit different. We have to be careful how we address it. Is church attendance. Church attendance. Some people view church attendance. Now, should you be favored? Sure. Some people view church attendance as this is how I check my list with God. And when I attend church, I'm making a better relationship with God. And it's how, what is church attendance in America? It's an identifying mark of Christians, right? Christians do what? They go to church when? On Sundays. And more importantly, what time do they go to church on Sundays? Typically, for a long time, 11 o'clock, right? Isn't that an odd time? I told you all this before. Originally, that started back in the days when farmers had to get up and milk their cows before they could go to church. And so that's why it actually got set to 11 o'clock. It was a farming time. And shame on them for doing something on a Sunday, by the way. They shouldn't get up and go to work on a Sunday and then come to church and try to please God. Y'all seeing the irony in all of this? If we're not careful, people will start to try to identify, are you a Christian? Yes. I go to church. Right? In fact, if you really want to hear someone tell you how good of a Christian you are, they'll tell you I go to church 3 times a week, or I go to church every time the doors are open. That's, if if we're not careful, we'll miss the point. What is it that God, what does the church exist for? Is it, does it exist to be our badge? Does it exist only as a means to, now, I'm not trying to get y'all to stop coming to churches. I'm trying to get us to come for the right reason and with the right motive and the right understanding and fall in love with God and not try to pursue God in the midst. If we fall in love with God, we'll do what? We'll be around God's people. We'll do God's things. We'll become more like God. And so when we see all of this, if we're not careful, we'll set things in our life that become our badges of Christianity. And when someone changes that, there are a lot of people that are really upset when churches didn't have an 11 o'clock service. Or they have an 11 o'clock service, but they would also have, what, an early service. And people have really ridiculed them for doing that. Why? Well, because if you're really serious about it, you'll come at 11 o'clock. You know, schedules have changed. People work all different times. There are some churches right now that will do a Thursday morning service because they have so many people in their churches. I mean, they do a Sunday morning service, but they'll do a Thursday morning service because so many people in their congregation work schedules that they miss so much Sunday morning, but they're available on a day during the week, and they'll come and they'll get their church. And there's people that's really ridiculing them because they're not following the tradition of when you're supposed to do. Does that make sense to y'all? So what we're trying to get you to recognize here is there may be a Pharisaic attitude in all of us about something. When a church does something different than your church does, or a Christian does something different than you, it's not breaking the law of God, then it's just a different way of doing it. And that's something for all of us to kind of grasp and understand. So I hope that this has kind of helped you as you look at Jesus being confronted with the Pharisees. You understand who they are, and by understanding who they are, we start to recognize them. Wow. I have some tendencies sometimes to be Pharisaic. I'm more interested in the traditional way of doing things, and this way of doing things, and I'm more comfortable with that. But when we really break it down, if it doesn't violate God's law, then there's liberty in those things. I hope that that's the part that you're taking away from. All right, so we're going to close out. I'm going to ask Kurt, if you would, to close us in prayer, and I appreciate y'all listening tonight, and you cooperated tonight. You actually engaged with it.
Help us to, or just to understand what's been